So these sort of shallow commercial interests trumped what was by far the most important issue. If something's being pumped near people's houses and schools and all that, they sure as hell ought to know what's in it. And if you pretend like you don't, or you act, you don't want to tell them, of course you're going to stoke paranoia.
Welcome to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. The show tagline is Live, Work, Love Colorado, and this is the show featuring world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Chris Wright, CEO of Liberty Oilfield Services. With past experience in fusion energy, solar, and geothermal, Chris calls himself an energy technology guy. He's a sought-after speaker and guest on national business shows because he doesn't hold back. Chris is outspoken and candid about the energy industry and the practice known as fracking, about leadership, about our nation, and about his passion for mountaineering. You'll enjoy this conversation with a Colorado business great. Thanks to sponsors Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Keg Logistics. I appreciate their support for Colorado entrepreneurs and for this show. Okay, let's get started with Chris Wright of Liberty Oilfield Services. Chris, you ready?
You bet. So my background's a technology guy and came into oil and gas only by luck, but we started Liberty Oilfield Services 7 years ago. Just a vision to be different, a very different culture, low turnover, drive to disrupt the way things have been done. And we've just grown organically from two folks 7 years ago to 2,300 folks today.
And
we work from the Canadian border to the Mexican border.
Yeah, and you went public not long ago.
We did, and we went public in January of this year.
Yeah, and on your website, you claim that Liberty Oilfield Services is the best damn frack company, right? So what's that about?
That was the business plan. From the very start, I said, look, we're set up to do one thing, and that's to be the best damn frack company, period. You know, whether it's good times or bad times or a little company or a big company,
yeah.
The goal isn't to grow or consolidate or get some size. It's just to be passionate about being good at what we do. That's our charge.
Well, I think that's refreshing too, and it'll be interesting to see. We probably can't get into this today, but maybe in 2 years we'll see sort of what shareholders want to talk about, because they want you to focus on profits and you want to focus on how you run the company. Those sometimes are different things.
I don't think in the long run they are. In the short run they are, absolutely.
Yeah, right.
But if you're a shareholder, what you really care about is the long run of the business. And the way to do that is to get great humans that stay together in a culture and succeed.
Well, and you're in a business that's controversial. I mean, fracking. And fracking, as most people know by now, is short for hydraulic fracturing, the process by which fluid is used deep underground to create tiny cracks in shale that allow gas and oil to be released. I mean, that's my interpretation. I think I'm close, but it has benefits and problems. I mean, give us an overview that you see from your position.
No, that's absolutely the right way to do it. So fracking is old, you know, started in the late 1940s as a way to get oil and gas out of rocks that it didn't flow out of easily. Mm-hmm. And then what happened was in the late 90s in North Texas, right under the town of Fort Worth, a few tech nerds and a very hard-driving company called Mitchell Energy tried some different ideas, and in the blind squirrel finds nut, a different way to do hydraulic fracturing was introduced. So that's sort of when the game was changed. So people think that's when it really started.
It started working.
But it was really an innovation of an old technology. But what's great about it is now we can produce oil and gas straight from the source rocks where it was created 100 million years ago. Instead of waiting for it to leak out of those rocks and underground float up somewhere and go find it, we go straight to the source rocks.
Jed Clampett did it that way.
Exactly.
It happens occasionally, but not often, right?
And he went to Beverly Hills.
Yeah, perfect. So, and here you are in Colorado. But you say you're an energy tech guy. Your background includes fusion energy, solar, and geothermal. What brought you to fracking?
A missed paycheck. I was a graduate student at UC Berkeley. Proud. I was financially independent, and they didn't have my first paycheck, $872. They said, sorry, we'll give you two next month. And I said, what about this month?
Yeah.
They said, sorry, we only do a check run once a month. I called up a gal, now the wife of my wife of 25 years and mother of my children. And she was out in the Bay Area and she had a summer job. And she said, call this guy up. It wasn't thoughtful. It wasn't designed.
Really?
That's how I got in the oil and gas industry.
Wow. And so far it's been great for you, hasn't it?
It's been great. I mean, I've been interested in energy, mostly how it impacts the human condition my whole life. I just thought oil and gas was about to go away, so hey, I should be in the new stuff. And then what I didn't get at all then, 30 years ago, was that by far the most important energy innovations would actually be in oil and gas and not in new sources, which are still coming.
Yeah. Well, let's talk for just a moment about this maybe underappreciated idea of how oil impacts the human condition, as you explained. You've got 10 reasons. Maybe choose an example of something that maybe our listeners wouldn't think about how oil may be a positive contributor to life that we don't think about.
Yeah, I'll start from the top of my list. But real quick, I'll say, look, our company's named Liberty for a reason, right? The life expectancy of a human 200 years ago was not meaningfully different than it was 20,000 years ago. Long-term per capita economic growth throughout all of human history was zero. Good times, bad times, but no real progress for the average guy. We had more kings and queens and more rich people, but the average person's life didn't really improve until the spread of human economic liberty, really in the first half of the 1800s. Now, all of a sudden, it was you didn't have to get government approval to start a business. We went past mercantilism into free enterprise. This started the growth and the improvement of the human condition, but you can't power businesses and all the things humans want to do, cutting down trees.
Yeah.
England was already deforested. So the spread of human liberty led to the arrival of oil and gas on the scene. And my top three reasons that oil and gas, I think, are great for humans is since the first oil and gas well was drilled, human life expectancy globally has doubled from 35 years to over 70 years.
And you're tying those together?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The spread of human liberty is the most important thing. That's the change in condition.
And you're saying that fossil fuels fueled the growth of liberty.
The other way. The growth of liberty meant people were free to do things, free to innovate, free to manufacture, free to grow. So you need energy to do those things. And trees only get you so far. Yeah. So we needed a new energy source. And then now with entrepreneurialism, if you develop something new, you can own it.
Yep.
People drilled oil and gas wells.
So how about the contrary, those with contrary views who say, yeah, okay, it fueled that evolution of human opportunity, but now do we still need it versus why shouldn't we be converting?
Yeah, great question. So I'm all about energy technologies. I don't really have a dog in the fight that I'm pro oil and gas. I'm pro energy and human opportunity. But I would flip it the other way. The biggest problem we have right now is we have over 1 billion people in the world with no access to electricity. We still have 10% of the world population, 750 million people that live on less than $2 a day. Without oil and gas, women spend hours every day walking to gather wood and sticks. They got to go far away to find fresh water. Mm-hmm. You bring oil and gas or electricity to a village. Yep. Now you've got energy packaged. You got a pump that delivers water. You free women and you move towards a modern life. You grow life expectancy. You grow human opportunities. So to make the world better, we actually need more oil and gas, not less.
So listeners may think that you're a typical pro oil and gas guy, and yet you've got really contrarian views around some of these things. In fact, I heard you speak at the Opportunity Coalition. You said some things that surprised me. So let me bounce. There are three of them. Let me bounce all three of them off of you.
You bet.
One quote is, "Our industry has been terrible, terrible, terrible regarding PR."
We are, And I think we're starting to get better, but we're still bad. But we've advanced from terrible, terrible, terrible to maybe just a single terrible.
Yeah.
But when I was a kid in high school, so this is 30 plus years ago, everybody knew oil and gas was bad and greedy and dirty. And I knew that for sure because everyone around me told me it was so. So if that's the image of your industry, what do? They kept their heads down. They dealt with the government officials they needed to. And they didn't engage with the public. And when they did, it was sort of these scripted bullet points that nobody believed anyway. So they just kept their head down. And when they talked, they were so paranoid, they didn't speak candidly. And that's not a way to ingratiate yourself to the public. So we've got ourselves in the position we are today, of our own doing.
Yep. So I've got two more to run by you. First, I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Chris Wright, CEO of Liberty Oilfield Services. So a couple more things I heard you say that sort of caught me off guard. You said it's wrong not to disclose what's in frac fluid. This is a big controversy.
Yes, it was a big controversy. There was increased safety concerns, which I get. Neighborhoods that hadn't seen oil and gas development had it. Stuff's being pumped under their houses. They wanted to know what was in it. I sure as hell would have wanted to know.
But those in your industry, your customers, were resisting telling government, telling communities what's in it.
So, actually, it was our competitors, but yes.
Okay.
Because if you're a frack company and you've got your proprietary fluid, you want to charge extra for it. You don't want the guy next door to know what's in it. So these sort of shallow commercial interests trumped what was by far the most important issue. If something's being pumped near people's houses and schools and all that, they sure as hell ought to know what's in it. And if you pretend like you don't, or you don't want to tell them, of course you're going to stoke paranoia. A catastrophic mistake of our industry. Fortunately, the law was passed. It's all disclosed now. It's on the websites. But the damage to credibility was done.
Yeah. And along those same lines, you said that the industry is being reckless, and you're referring to pumping water back underground near areas where earthquakes could be caused. And your views are very different from what we hear a lot.
I'd say they're not so far away now, but that's right. But you're right. So when you produce oil and gas from underground, you produce a huge amount of water. We produce more water from deep underground than we produce oil. And we have since as old as the oil industry is. And so that water, if it comes from deep underground, it's not clean, fresh water. You want to get rid of it. And the best place to get rid of it is dispose it back deep underground where it came from. But if you inject that in large quantities near larger faults, you will create earthquakes. Now, most places, it's impossible to do it. Some places, you'll create small earthquakes. But do it the wrong place and the wrong way, and you'll create lots of sizable earthquakes, which is what's been going on in Oklahoma for years.
But it's been denied for years too, right?
It has. I think now it's been acknowledged by the state and the government, and they're working on solving it. But I agree with your point, Dave. Years too late.
Yeah.
And simply inject the water in a different place, and you won't cause earthquakes. We're guilty as charged.
Yeah. And that may be a good transition point, because you say that from your perspective that you're grounded in data, you're grounded in analytics, you even call yourselves tech nerds that do fracking. So as you consider the role of data in your world, how would you explain that?
Yeah, when you're doing something deep underground, we have expectations or predictions about what's happening, but the earth is complicated. So my original company, Pinnacle Technology, started 26 years ago. The focus of our business was direct measurement techniques to see what was happening underground. But if someone tells you, hey, here's my theory, the answer should always be, where's the data to show your theory's right?
Yeah.
We have lots of ideas. Some are right and some are wrong. But you have to be willing to admit you're wrong when the data shows you're wrong.
So are your views around America, around opportunity, are those data-driven, or are those visceral emotions that you bring to the office every day and to the way you operate your company?
Well, they're both. They're both. Dave, as you know, when I was a young kid, I got this passion for poverty. I grew up in a middle-class neighborhood. I went to good schools. I had above-average quantitative skills. I've had this great life. Not everyone's born in the right neighborhood. Not everybody gets good schools. That, to me, is sort of un-American, that they don't have an equal opportunity. But when I was young and I was all in and addressing that problem, I thought it was a resource transfer. We should just shift some money over here and then we can get rid of poverty, which is a natural reaction. But in my travels around not just around the ghettos of this country, but around the world, what I realized is that doesn't work. In fact, it does the opposite. We incentivize poverty. We destroy the incentives for the behaviors that lift people out of poverty. When I traveled in rural Africa, nomads who are much smaller than you or me, they weigh 80 pounds because they're calorie deficient, but yet they're happy. They're in charge of their lives. They got a wife and a family. If the rains don't come, things are going to be tough, but they're authoring their lives. So I came to this sort of libertarian belief that it's humans really need to be unleashed for freedom to grow. And Amartya Sen, a Nobel Prize winning Indian economist, said it best. He said, freedom not only raises people out of prosperity, but it's an end in itself. Mm. So the first one's data nerd. It's the only way people have ever been lifted out of poverty is free enterprise and human freedom.
Yeah.
But the other is, it is visceral, right? Nobody wants to be told what to do. Everyone's got different desires and dreams and goals in life, and they should be free to do them.
Well, I'm going to go off script a little bit, because you mentioned free enterprise. And one of the concerns I have about free enterprise now is that it's become sort of abused.
Without a doubt.
I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, you run a public company. People have expectations around what free enterprise means for you as a tool to grow your business and as a tool to return shareholder value. And yet some of those same people with those expectations are maybe not holding free enterprise up to the highest level of integrity.
Well, it's not some, it's most. Look, humans are wired, we're wired to look after our own interests. And so the reason we didn't have free enterprise till the early 1800s is it's not in the interest of people in power, right? Mercantilism was the government granted these guys a license to mine coal. They don't want to give anybody else a license to mine coal up there. And so I hate the expression pro-business. Mm-hmm. I'm not pro-business. I'm pro-consumer. The biggest corruption of free enterprise is the alliance between government and big business, right? Big business, what do they fear? They fear competitors, upstarts, rising up. They love regulation and very tricky rules on business because big businesses can navigate that, but it prevents the scrappy young guys coming up who are going to eat their lunch. So government should not be pro-business. It should be pro-freedom, pro-choice. The licensure regulations to braid hair, you got to have a 2-year degree, you know, that's to prevent hair salons from having to compete with young immigrants from Haiti, you know, taxi cabs, right? It's a monopoly and they don't want Uber coming in and eating their business.
Yeah.
I think you got to let people free to compete. I think businesses should have to fight like dogs to find profits because they're always being disrupted by others. That's the way you lift people up, not to protect businesses, but to allow everyone free to pursue free enterprise.
So are you, I know you're a family guy. You've just spoken about how you view business. You similar with the way you raise your family?
Yeah.
I mean, you're free to pursue whatever kind of thing, right?
Oh, absolutely. My son had hair longer than Audrey's and now it's dyed purple and cut short. He's a free spirit. He's totally different than my daughter and myself. And I wish he wouldn't get another tattoo, of course. But am I proud, crazy proud that this kid's got a spirit and a belief and a view? Absolutely. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
And my daughter, also very different from me and very different from my son. Humans are different. There are different things that bring joy to my son, that bring joy to my daughter, and that bring joy to me and my wife.
Yeah.
But that's the beauty. That's the beauty of life.
You think about that at work as you're managing your team?
I do. You know, that was one of our things. There's no vacation policy at our company. There's no, you got to be at work at this time, you got to leave at work this time. You know, shit, at college, I went to bed super late and I slept half the day. It's just the way I'm wired. Other people go to bed early and they wake up at 6 a.m. So I think to get the best out of humans, yep. You got to give humans flexibility to pursue what floats their boat.
Listeners, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. I'm speaking with Chris Wright, CEO of Liberty Oilfield Services. Please visit ProCo360.com where you can subscribe to my newsletter for episodes, for my blog and books that I'm listening to on Audible. Again, that's ProCo360.com. I hope you're enjoying this episode with Chris Wright of Liberty Oilfield Services. So speaking of being free to pursue what you love, you love mountaineering, don't you? Talk about that and how you got into it.
I do. I love the outdoors. You know, I got into it because I grew up here in Colorado. We look straight at those mountains.
Yeah.
You know, so skiing as a kid, and then my brother and I, my sisters and I, loved to go sledding. We'd love to go hiking in the woods. Got cross-country skis when I was about 12 or 13, and I'd just go off into the woods if we were staying up in the mountain at a friend's condo we rented a place. Yeah. So my brother went to CU Boulder. He's 3 years older than me, got into rock climbing. So I got into some rock climbing with him and then, you know, hiking the 14ers and then ultimately alpine climbing and traveling the world a little bit to climb. I love the outdoors, the wilderness, the adventure.
Did you part of the production of an outdoor movie? Which one?
So Conrad Anker, one of the legendary alpine climbers of our day and a phenomenal human being as well. Conrad and two other younger guys climbed Meru is the name of the mountain. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of one of the last unclimbed features in the Himalayas. Been attempted for 30 years by the best climbers in the world. It's only been climbed once, but Conrad and Jimmy and Renan wanted to make a movie about it. And I contributed some money and brought a friend in. And so I'm an executive producer.
Good.
I didn't really do much except cheer them on and tell them you got to have great music to have a fun movie.
Well, cool.
But they did a phenomenal job. And it's a story about the human spirit. I say mountain climbing is sort of a metaphor for life. You know, there's risks. Yep. The human choices you make are the most important. You can't get down. When times are tough, you got to trudge on.
It's so funny. I just drafted a blog last night because I told you before we started our talk today that I went climbing in Ouray last weekend. And I just drafted this blog that had to do with, you know, are those anchors, I don't know who put those anchors in. Are they sound? And And I just decided, I don't know if they are or not. They probably are. I'm going to climb. And I, you know, there's some metaphor in that too, right? Around risk-taking, around business.
It's about trust in a community, right? You thought that they were too. Sound because you thought there's all these climbers that know more than me mm-hmm. and they're clipping into those bolts and they're rappelling off them. People always say to me, well, how do you know to trust a store? I'm like, if a store does the wrong thing, it'll be out of business pretty quickly. So I think it's that societal network effect.
That's an interesting dimension that I had not considered with this notion of trust in a community. I think you're right.
You know, if you had a government regulator that had to certify bolts, it would be terrible, right?
You know, I think I'd trust them less.
Of course you would. Of course you would. This is a problem.
Yeah.
This is a problem. The difference between the FDA, a government organization to approve drugs, and Underwriters Limited, a private organization that certifies the safeness of lights and wiring and all that.
Yeah.
One's dynamic. It evolves. It has a balance of risks, and we trust it. The FDA is afraid of something bad happen, but what that means is they stop good things from happening.
Things are slow, sure.
Life-saving drugs don't get to people before they die.
Well, I'm going to shift gears right away from that because I want to go back to this question of, I mean, I know you love Colorado. You grew up here. Liberty Oilfield Services are here based in Colorado. Is there a connection? Is there a cultural connection with being a Colorado company for you?
Oh, without a doubt. You know, look, I'm in Colorado again just by accident. My parents moved here when I was six. So I grew up here and loved it. I moved between Boston and San Francisco three times. And then it was like time to get back to Colorado. Yeah. So our kids would have roots here. But it's actually a fantastic advantage in the energy industry. Because think of the other big energy towns. You know, there are Houston and Tulsa and Dallas and Midland. You know, nice cities, great humans, but nowhere near the quality of life to live in any one of those towns in Denver.
You recruit?
So you get, and Denver, Colorado right now is a magnet for young people graduating from college in Florida or Georgia or wherever. And our business is more than half millennials, right? So to build a great business, you got to be in a dynamic community where young people want to move and start their lives there. And Denver checks those boxes.
Yeah.
And look, we run relay races, 165 miles through the mountains.
I did that Outward Bound race a couple of times. If that's the one you're referring to,
the Flaming
like that.
Foliage Relay.
Oh, that's a different one. But the all night relays. Those are super fun.
We're the corporate record holder for the Flaming Foliage Relay.
Wow.
It's coming up in a couple weekends again. We got a bunch of outdoor competitive athletes, you know, like softball. Think of all the activities you can do together outside of work in Colorado. Phenomenal.
Well, and so since you're running a company with over half millennials, when you and I first met, we talked about different books and different things we look at to stay fresh and to get and keep new ideas flowing. What are you reading now? What are you doing now to stay fresh and kind of keep the juices flowing?
I read all sorts of stuff. I hugely love to read history. You know, this whole thing of how did people rise out of poorness? You know, Francis Fukuyama has written great stuff on that. Douglas North, my good friend Matt Ridley, his book The Rational Optimist, I think is simply tremendous.
What's the key concept there?
It's about why did humans advance, and it was human cooperation. He follows on an economist, Leonard Reed's story from 50 years ago that no one knows how to build a pencil. No, there's no single human that could build a pencil, right? Because no one knows how to mine the steel and the rubber and the woods and the graphite, but that the great things in society are sort of this network brain of all humans working together. And Matt's book is fantastic, but even more accessible to the millennial generation is his TED Talk called When Ideas Have Sex. I think it's got 2 million plus views. We joke him that 1 million of those came just because it has sex in the title.
Yeah, of course.
But it's a great summary of this idea of human cooperation is what advances society. And when you prevent humans from cooperating or societies get small or insular, they don't advance as well.
Wow. Well, I think that's a great topic on which to sort of wrap up. And I want to thank listeners today. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Today on ProCo 360, I've been speaking with Chris Wright, CEO of Colorado-based Liberty Oilfield Services. What a great conversation, wide-ranging, and I really appreciate the energy you put into it. Thanks for being with me.
Dave, thanks for having me, and thanks to the Colorado community for making such a great state.
And to my listeners, thank you for joining us on ProCo 360. Again, this is Dave Tabor. My mission is to feature world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. You can help. by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app and by reviewing the show. Also by subscribing to the ProCo 360 newsletter. Thanks again to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, Jones and Keller, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce, and to show engineer Mike here at 3rd and James Studios. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com and via your favorite podcast app. Search ProCo 360. Thanks for listening and thanks for sharing. That was fun.
It was free flow.
I
was
good. Mike, yeah. I saw Mike over there kind of nodding.
Maybe a few times.
Yeah. Like, that's cool. So we'll make sure we'll have to clean up my mess ups at the beginning and the end. But that was great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.